The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Traveler, episode 813. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about museums and markets and parks, an indoor graveyard, William the Conqueror, and William Shakespeare as we go back to London, England. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about London. I'd like to welcome to the show Julie from aladyinlondon.com, and you can probably guess what major city of the world we're talking about. We're going to talk about London again today. Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And what is your connection with London?
I'm originally from California, as my accent might reveal.
See, I don't think you have an accent at all, because I'm also from California. So.
True. I have lived in London for 15 years, and I moved over there in 2007 after quitting my job in San Francisco and just getting a visa and wanting to see where life took me. And I started the blog right before I moved, and it's been my full-time job since 2010 now, and I write obviously all about London and travel all over the world.
Excellent. And why should someone go to London?
That is a great question. And the answer is there are so many good reasons. I love London for the history. It goes back thousands of years, all the way to the Roman times. I love London for its world-class everything. You get world-class music coming through London, world-class culture, art, exhibitions, theater, performances, anything you can imagine. There's pretty much world-class that in London. So it's great in terms of culture. I love London for its diversity. You meet people from all over the world. You can find food from all over the world. You never feel really foreign in London because there are so many people from so many places. And then there's also so many niche topics and interests that you can fulfill in London. London is a huge city, and no matter what you're interested in, no matter what you're passionate about, you can find something that will fit the bill in London. And I think those are just the beginnings of what I would say are reasons to go to London.
Excellent. And what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend?
It really depends on what you're interested in. Whenever people ask me what they should do in London, I always say it depends where you want to spend your time and what you like to do and see, because London is huge and you could spend your whole life there and never be done. So I'd like to say try to focus in on the things that you like. But also, if you're a first-time visitor, there are some things that usually are things to tick the boxes for. So I usually tell people, make sure to walk along the South Bank. You get to take in all the kind of icons, Big Ben, you can ride the London Eye, go to the Tate Modern, you can see St. Paul's Cathedral. And all the while you're walking along the river, there are street performers, there are markets. So it's a really nice way to take in the city. I also usually tell people not to big attractions like Westminster. You can see the Houses of Parliament, Big Ben, Westminster Abbey, and then go up to Trafalgar Square. You can go to the National Gallery if you want to, or just walk around and take in the scene. There's often events and festivals there, so that's fun. Then I would recommend definitely walking through Soho and Covent Garden. They're really the heart of London. There's so much going on. You can shop, you can go to pubs, you can see street performers. There's a lot to take in there. And then there's the obvious landmarks like the Tower of London, the British Museum, places that a lot of people just like to go because they're associated with London. Again, there's so much to do and see, and it can be as broad or as niche as you want it to be.
Okay, let's go back and do that in a little more detail. Otherwise, we've got a five-minute show. You started us walking on the South Bank, which would be the South Bank of the Thames, and you started, I believe, at the Houses of Parliament, and we're walking to the east.
Yes.
Okay, so we're at the Houses of Parliament. Are we going to go in and see the Houses of Parliament? Are we going to go climb the parliamentary clock tower, or what are we going to do here?
You can do tours of the Houses of Parliament. You have to pre-book them, but they're definitely worth it if you are interested in anything from history to politics to just seeing architecture. There's a lot that you can take in the Houses of Parliament, so it's certainly something you can do. Again, Westminster Abbey is right next door, so if you want to tour that, you can do so as well. It's definitely worth peeking inside. There's a lot of history there as well.
Well, and you say a lot of history. I know we've talked about this on the show, and this is not the first time we've done a show on London, but London, you can't run out of things to talk about London, as you said. But I know my wife was very surprised. She did not know what she was getting into when she went to Westminster Abbey. She thought she was going to a church rather than an indoor cemetery, that there were so many famous people buried there, and poets and politicians and things like that.
Definitely.
And I think that's something you probably ought to know. And I didn't know she didn't know, so I didn't tell her.
I agree. No, for sure. There's so many tombs there of famous people, whether they're royalty or politicians or writer. There's a poet's corner. So that's definitely a highlight. You can even go there for concerts if you go at a specific times. There are choral concerts and other types of concerts there, which is nice too.
Okay. And then where I think you had us on the London Eye, and the London Eye being very obviously somewhat touristy, still worth doing?
Yes, I think so. I'm afraid of heights and I still go on it because the views are just amazing and it's just such an icon on the skyline. So it's a fun thing to do. It takes about a half an hour. You definitely want to pre-book tickets and you just go around and slowly up and slowly down, seeing the different views of London and along the Thames.
Well, in London is not, there are some tall buildings now, but so much of it is shorter than the London Eye that you can see for quite a while there.
Exactly, yeah. With the exception of the city and Canary Wharf, where there are a lot of skyscrapers, London has a pretty low skyline, so the London Eye definitely gets you above most things.
Right. Cool. And then you walked further east. What are we going to come to next?
Exactly. So next you come to some of the main buildings along the South Bank. You get the Royal Festival Hall, you get the National Theater, and then those areas often have street performers or festivals outside or Christmas markets in the winter. So that's just a fun place to walk around and just see what's on.
Okay. I have not been to the Royal Festival Hall.
Oh, it's great. There are a lot of good shows on there.
Okay. I've been to the Globe, which we're coming up to in a bit, but
I was going to say, yeah.
And where to?
So from there, you can keep walking east, and that's when you start to get towards things like the Globe. You get towards Tate Modern, which is one of the most famous art museums. It's also free entry, so a lot of people just pop in, see a few things, take in the views. You can go see the views from the top and then head out. Or you can spend the whole day there if you want to. And obviously the Globe then, you get the theater performances and the history as well. They do tours there even when there aren't performances on. You can just tour it to see what it was like in Shakespeare's day. Obviously it's a recreation, but you know what its original was like in Shakespeare's day. And then from there, you get to places like Borough Market, which is one of the most famous food markets in London. And that is a great place to get lunch or a snack or just wander around and take in all the different delicacies that you can find at Borough Market.
And do you have a favorite stall at Borough Market if we're going there for lunch?
Oh, goodness. I usually go to a different place every time, but there are really good stalls for things like burgers. There's risotto, there's seafood, there's paella, whatever you want, you can find it there.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I've gone there after work. I worked for a short period of time at Time Out London, and so spent a few weeks in the city there. And even after dinner, even after work, it was a nice place to go over and grab a bite.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, and then where to?
So from there, you get pretty far east and you can start going into a part of London they call More London, or it's still the South Bank, but it's basically by City Hall. So you can see City Hall, the HMS Belfast, which is a big ship that you can tour if you're into military history. And then you can cross over Tower Bridge, which a lot of people mistake for London Bridge, but it's actually called Tower Bridge. It's the big famous one with the two towers. And you can tour that one too if you want to. Or you can walk across it and you get to the Tower of London, which is where a lot of people also, again, like to tour.
And when you say tour Tower Bridge, I'm going up in the tower and seeing the mechanism for the how it works as a drawbridge?
Yeah, exactly. You can go up in the towers and you can walk across the suspension bridge that goes between the two towers.
Huh. And I did not know that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it offers great views. It's a fun place to learn about the history of the bridge and just explore what Tower Bridge is all about.
Okay. And this is a Victorian style bridge.
Exactly.
So again, Victorian. You say not London Bridge, because London Bridge is much, much older than that.
Yes.
And not there anymore. But
and not there anymore, yes.
You can go see that, but you have to go to Arizona.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. And then are we crossing over Tower Bridge?
Yes, you'd cross over Tower Bridge, and at that point you get to the Tower of London. And okay. That is one of the most historic places in London. The White Tower in the middle is one of the oldest buildings in the city. And you can see everything there, from the crown jewels, which are popular to see. Mm-hmm. And you can see armor displays. There are all kinds of things. It's a really big fortification, and there's lots of history there, from kings and queens and beheadings and all kinds of things that are both exciting and grim.
Traces back to the William the Conqueror built the main tower, the main building.
Exactly.
Excellent. Yeah, no, it's an interesting tour. The Beefeaters give a nice tour there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then where are we off to? This is all the first 15 minutes we're in town, right?
Yes. No, you could spend an entire day doing just that or more. You could spend 2 days, depending. If you go into all the museums and churches and everything else, you could spend a few days doing just that. But if you just want the quick version, you can definitely do it in a day. From there, I would usually tell people spend a day or part of a day in the West End. So either if you're at Tower Bridge, you can take the tube over there. If you're starting out on a new day, you can just get there however you want to get there. And I say start in Covent Garden. It's another sort of just beloved, iconic place in London. It's got the covered piazza, which has markets and shops and street performers. And there's just always something going on every season of the year. And it's just a really fun, lively place to spend time.
And you also took us on the tube. And this is something we probably ought to stop and talk a little bit about, because...
Yeah.
I'm going to guess you're not going to recommend we rent a car in London.
Oh, goodness. No, I have never driven in London.
Or are you crazy would be the other way of saying that.
I think just finding parking would be enough to do.
Right, right. And so we can take our double-decker buses, which is fun sometimes, but we're probably going to be on the tube for a lot of places that we want to get to in any time period. What kind of hints do we need to know in terms of, besides minding the gap, about the London tube system, the underground?
Yeah, it's pretty comprehensive and it's pretty easy to navigate. You can use even your debit card, even if it's a foreign debit card, to pay touch in and touch out, so you don't have to worry about buying tickets and things like that, which is
nice. Oh, that's changed. Okay.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, no matter how much you ride, it will convert to a day pass if you used it enough, so you don't have to worry about that kind of thing either, which is great.
Oh, that is a nice change. So absolutely. You don't recommend getting an Oyster card then anymore?
Not anymore. You really don't need to.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really nice.
Well, this is one of the reasons we're doing the show over.
Yeah.
We've covered it 10 years ago, but things change. Okay.
They do.
Good to
they
know.
Do.
That's,
yeah,
I'm glad
that's
I asked.
One of the big tips that I have. And then also keeping in mind that London is huge. So even if you're taking the tube, which is pretty fast when it's not delayed, although there are delays pretty often, you still need to leave yourself ample time to get places. Even if you are only going a few stops, you might have to walk a bit on either end, or you might have delays that you didn't foresee. But it is a really comprehensive, good public transport system.
Okay. The only other thing I can think that was useful for us that we didn't know the first time we were there is mm-hmm. that the newer lines are deeper than the older lines, which makes sense. You have to build a new line. You have to put it where the other line isn't. And mm-hmm. so that means that some of the lines that are like the Circle Line in downtown are not that far down. But we were way up somewhere up by the Regent's Canal, I think, when we were there the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the newer lines. And we were navigating a lot of stairs because a lot of escalators weren't working with a stroller because we had a young child at the time. And it's just useful to know that some of them are going to take a little more hiking than others.
Absolutely. They have done a lot in recent years to try to make things more accessible in terms of elevators and step-free access. But yeah, there are still some stations where you do have to navigate stairs and escalators. The one exciting thing actually this year with public transport is they've opened the Elizabeth Line, which is a new line that goes all the way from Heathrow into central London and then out to East London and beyond.
Oh, nice.
And
okay.
That is great for a lot of people getting from the airport to the city center because it's a lot faster and more cost effective than some of the older ways.
So yeah, older ways, you used to take the express to King's Cross?
Paddington,
sorry.
You can take the Heathrow Express to Paddington, yeah, which is fast, or you can take the Piccadilly line of the tube, which is slower.
But you now recommend the Elizabeth line.
Yeah, I think the Elizabeth line is a good option for most people, depending where you're going. Yeah.
Good to know. And most people will be flying into Heathrow, but there are a few other airports from London which are conveniently not located in London.
Yes, true. Technically, we say we have 5 airports, but Heathrow is the main one for international flights, especially from the US. Some flights to the US also go into Gatwick, which is south of the city. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of trains. You can take the Gatwick Express, which is the fast train, or if you want something less expensive and a little bit longer a journey time, you can take a regular train. And then there's City Airport, which serves mostly short haul flights, and that is in East London. And there's Stansted, which is way north of the city, and that
which
again
is in
usually
Scotland,
serves short
I believe,
haul. Yeah, it's near Cambridge. Yeah, and then there is Luton Airport, which is also north of the city, mostly short haul. And there's even Southend, which is way out in Essex, which is now apparently a London airport,
okay,
and that again mostly serves short haul.
Well, and the reason that might be useful is if you're doing London on the way to Europe, for instance, and it can be a great introduction to Europe. If you haven't been to Europe before, start with an English-speaking country that has
absolutely
a lot of words in common, and then go on to France or Spain or wherever you're going, and then you're more likely going to be on one of those short-haul flights to Europe, for instance.
Yes, exactly.
Excellent.
Or the Eurostar. The train goes to Europe.
Or the Eurostar, which is
France and Belgium and the Netherlands.
Right. From Victoria Station?
That's from St. Pancras.
St. Pancras, okay. There are a lot of train stations in London.
There's no central station.
And I get confused.
Yeah. No, I think everybody does. It's very, very confusing which one's which and which one goes where.
Yeah, interesting history built by different companies and not all built at the same time, by the same company, not meant to connect. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, you were taking us to Covent Garden, and when I interrupted you, and then where were we going from Covent Garden? We were in the West End.
Exactly, West End. So Covent Garden, walking through Soho is fun too. There's great bars and restaurants and pubs in Soho. It's really well known for nightlife, so that's somewhere to go in the evening as well. And then walking...
Now, you say nightlife. Do you have a particular fun nightlife spot or two that you would recommend in Soho?
Oh, goodness. It depends what you want. There are a lot of gay clubs in Soho, is known for gay kind of nightlife and gay culture in general. So there's gay clubs you can go to. GAY is a big one, or at least it was when I was young and in my clubbing days. There's also some, I'm trying to think of, if you like jazz, there's Ronnie Scott's, which is a very famous jazz club in London. And there's great live music there a lot of nights of the week, if not all. In terms of bars, there are different. Archer Street is a great bar. It has just good drinks and fun music, and it's a great place to go in the evening in Soho. It's near Shaftesbury Avenue and Piccadilly Circus, so it's pretty central.
Okay. Excellent. And after nightlife in Soho, where are we off to? Bed. But the next day, where are we off to?
The next day, yeah. I would say from there, it really depends on your interests. I love South Kensington because the museums there are amazing. There's the Natural History Museum, the V&A, which focuses on kind of art and art history.
It's the Victoria and Albert Museum.
It used to be called the Victoria and Albert Museum. It really just goes by the V&A now.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I don't know if they officially changed the name, but it's just V&A everywhere you see it these days. And then there's the Science Museum. And those three are all right next door to each other. And they're great. They're all free entry, so you can, again, go for as little or as long as you want to. There's temporary exhibitions that are great, especially the V&A. People tend to book tickets way in advance for those, and they sell out. And it's just a fun day to spend going around the museums. They're not far from Hyde Park in Kensington Gardens, so you can go up there, walk around, or take a boat out on the Serpentine if you're in Hyde Park and the weather's nice. And that's just a nice kind of way to spend
the day. I don't know the Serpentine in Hyde Park. Please elucidate my ignorance here.
Yeah, no, it's a big man-made lake in the middle of the park. You can find everything from paddle boats to rowboats, and it's just fun to walk around it and take in the scenery.
Okay. Excellent.
From there, I would say maybe go up to Notting Hill. That's a famous area, obviously, from the movie of the same name, but it's also a great local neighborhood. There's a famous antiques market there, especially on Saturdays, and there's great shopping, restaurants. Portobello Road is the famous place to be, but you can go all over the different side streets around it and find, again, bars, restaurants, pubs. There are colorful houses people like to photograph. There's all kinds of things you can do in Notting Hill.
Okay. Yeah, I think of the street market as being what I hear people talk about most in Notting Hill.
Yes, exactly. It's definitely the most famous attraction there, but it's even outside of the market, it's a great local area. A lot of people who live in London love to go to Notting Hill and spend time in the cafes or restaurants or just walk around.
Any favorite cafe in Notting Hill?
Oh, maybe not cafe, but in terms of restaurants, I'm trying to think if I could choose.
you'd name two or three if it's two.
One that I really love is actually a pub, and it's called The Oak, and it's in the northern part of Notting Hill, and it has a downstairs and an upstairs. And downstairs you can get great pizzas and just very casual. Upstairs is more of a lounge type bar, and it's fun to go in the evening for drinks or cocktails.
Okay. Excellent. Where to next?
Yeah. I would say spend some time outside of zone one. Once you've seen the big sights and taken in the highlights, one of the things locals love most about London is that there is a lot beyond just the city center. And it's, again, with public transport being pretty easy, it's not hard to get out of zone one. And one of my favorite places to get out of zone one is Hampstead, which is a neighborhood in North London where I lived for the first 5 years that I was in the city. And it just feels like this country village that's been plonked down right in London, which it really was, because originally London was much smaller and Hampstead was a village, and then London grew up around it and took it over. But it still has that really charming feel to it, the pretty streets, the little pretty houses. There are some tiny little museums in the neighborhood. There are great pubs. And then there's this huge park called Hampstead Heath, which is a great place to walk around. There's bathing ponds if you're brave enough to go swimming. And there are great views because it's on a hill, and so you can see the whole London skyline.
You say bathing ponds, and if you're brave enough to go go swimming, I guess we ought to talk about weather.
Yes. So
it is not known for having a tropical climate.
True.
And I believe that the English line is, there's no such thing as bad weather, there's only inappropriate clothing.
Yes.
When is the best time to go to London?
That is a good question. Weather in London, just like weather everywhere else in the world, has been fairly unpredictable in recent years. We've had some winters that are much colder than normal. We've had some winters that are much warmer than normal. This summer has been one of the hottest on record. We've had some record-breaking heat over 100 degrees. But generally speaking, I would say weather-wise and crowd-wise, I usually say May and September are great times to go. In May, you start to get warmer weather, longer days, and beautiful gardens and flowers. You get all the roses coming out, wisterias out. It's just, London is very lush and beautiful in May. And you don't have quite the high tourism crowds that you get later in the summer. In September, you start getting autumn, although September still stays fairly warm in London. And again, the tourist crowds have mostly gone away in September, and it's still perfectly nice to be there in terms of weather and atmosphere.
Okay.
If you want to do something seasonal, you can go to London in December and do the Christmas kind of thing, when it's obviously much colder, but you get the Christmas markets, which there seem to be more every year, and you get the Christmas theater, the pantos, you get all kinds of very festive lights up all over the city. So it's a nice time to be there in that sense, but obviously you do have to contend with colder weather.
Okay. You had us at Hampstead Heath.
Oh, yes. So, from Hampstead, you can either spend more time in North London. You can even walk down the hill into Primrose Hill, which is a very pretty neighborhood, has a high street with some nice shops and pubs, and a park with more good views of London.
And a high street would be a main street. That would be one of those.
Exactly.
Those words that we have in common but don't mean the same thing. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And then just south of there is Camden, and the markets in Camden are really famous. They're huge. There's a lot there. They used to be more known for kind of goth and alternative goods, but now they're much more mainstream in terms of things that I'd say the majority of people visiting London would be interested in buying or at least browsing for. There's also food there. So if you want to go to a food stall and get lunch or a snack or something like that, there's plenty of options for that. And Camden, it's right on the canal, so it's just a nice atmosphere there as well.
And you say the canal, you're talking about the Regent's Canal.
Regent's Canal, exactly.
Which the first time I was in Camden, I walked from Regent's Park, which has probably the prettiest section of that canal with all the canal boats there. Is it still a fun walk to get over to walking along the canal?
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of people will go all the way from Little Venice and Maida Vale in the west, down through Regent's Park, through Camden, and down into King's Cross. King's Cross is an area that has developed tremendously over the last 10, 15 years, and there's a lot going on there with shops and restaurants, and they've really done a lot in terms of just making it a place people want to go.
Interesting. Yeah, I just think of it as being a train station.
yeah. A lot of people, even when I moved there 15 years ago, it certainly was just a train station, and they've really developed the area just north of it to make it really nice along the canal.
Interesting. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
To From next.
King's Cross, I would say go down into Bloomsbury. It is known for a number of things. Literary history, you may have heard of the Bloomsbury Group, Virginia Woolf and her cohort. Mm-hmm. And then the British Museum is there. So obviously that's a draw for a lot of people who are interested in antiquities and history.
I'm going to pause you at the British Museum, mm-hmm. one of the best collections of artifacts in the world. Last I was there, it wasn't necessarily very well presented yet. It was still a lot of things pinned to things with little labels. Have they updated that? It's absolutely worth the price of admission. For one thing, it's free. But have they updated the presentation at all?
I'm not sure which gallery you were in, but I haven't seen anything like that in a long time. And okay. I've been all over the museum. So I'm guessing the answer is yes.
I'm guessing the answer is yes as well. I thought it might be.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, no, I'm thinking of pretty much anything outside the Elgin marbles, the Rosetta Stone that was still a little dated when I was last there, but it has been more than a decade, probably.
Okay, yeah, then it's definitely something that they've addressed since then, for sure.
Excellent.
And there's the Great Court, which is another draw for people who like architecture. It's done by Norman Foster, and it's just an amazing covered space in the middle of the British Museum that has beautiful contemporary architecture.
Excellent. Sorry, you were taking us somewhere else.
Yes, Bloomsbury. So there is the British Museum. There's the literary history. But there's also a lot of local places. Despite being right in the heart of London, you can really get into local areas in Bloomsbury. And one of my favorite places is Lamb's Conduit Street, which has great, strange name, but at Lamb's Conduit Street has great wine bars. It's got a cheese shop. It's got restaurants, cafes. There are shops. There are art galleries. And it's all packed into a relatively short span of a few blocks. And it's really a nice place to go that's near the British Museum but feels very local.
Cool.
And then from there's so many options. You can go into Fitzrovia, which is near Bloomsbury. Charlotte Street is a great place with lots of restaurants and bars and cafes. That will lead you towards sort of Oxford Street and Regent Street, which a lot of people love for shopping. If you want sort of what Brits call the high street names, what we would probably call the known retail types of shops that people tend to shop at, that is what you can find on Oxford Street and Regent Street. And that will lead you down into Piccadilly Circus, which is a fairly iconic place where you can see the big adverts on the screens.
And we're in a Piccadilly Circus, not being a circus, but being a traffic circle.
Yeah.
Again, one of those odd Britishisms. Mm-hmm. And is any particular thing we're going to do in Piccadilly Circus besides see the Statue of Eros?
Honestly, just taking in the scene is what most people do.
Okay.
I walk through Piccadilly Circus all the time. I'm usually on my way somewhere, so either to Regent Street or to Piccadilly. Piccadilly, the street itself is great. There's the Royal Academy if you like art. There's Fortnum and Mason if you like food or afternoon tea or sort of all things, the fine things in life. You can go to Jermyn Street and St. James's, which has a lot of traditional men's shops if you want to get custom shirts or just get a shave and a haircut in a proper British barber. You can do that there. And then you can go down to the river from there through Waterloo Place if you want to go through St. James's, get down to
St. James's Park.
Yes, exactly. Go down through Waterloo Place into St. James's Park and then go down through Westminster back to the Thames. So there's a lot of options. You can go into Leicester Square, see a movie, or watch for film premieres that often happen in Leicester Square. And then
more or a play. Now we're over in that region.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. A musical, a play.
Do one correction, and it's for me. Because apparently there is a well-known, popular, though mistaken belief that the statue in Piccadilly Circus is Eros. So you did not correct me, but you knew I was wrong, it sounds like.
I did, but most people think it's Eros, so it's probably not something too many people will catch. But
Anteros, apparently.
Yes.
Okay. I did not know that. It's okay to correct me. If you don't, somebody's going to send me an email and correct me anyway.
True. That's fair.
I've been wrong before.
Excellent. No, we all have, for sure.
Is there anything else we want to do in the city before we talk about what do we do if we want to go even further afield?
I would say we've covered the main bases in the city at this point. Obviously, there's more you can do. If you like shopping, you can go to the King's Road or Brick Lane if you want something more hipster. You can go out in the evenings. You can go out in Shoreditch or Hackney, which again are fairly hip, cool places to go out. Or if you want something a bit more bougie, as we say in the States, you can go out in, again, Chelsea or Fulham or somewhere like that. Mayfair has a lot of high-end clubs. But okay. Yeah, I would say we've covered a lot of what you would do in central London in a trip.
What did you specifically, you couldn't cover everything, but what did you specifically skip? We didn't see the changing of the guard. We didn't go to 10 Downing Street.
True, yeah. Changing the guard, yeah, that is actually really worthwhile if you want to see all the royal, the pomp and circumstance.
Okay.
I don't know why I forgot that. I used to live around the corner and I'd always get stuck in the people traffic for the changing the guard ceremony.
You got us as close to St. James Park. I didn't know if you were intentionally skipping.
So no,
St. James Park
all.
Is right next to Buckingham Palace.
Yes, yeah. And Buckingham Palace is definitely worth
it. I happened to be there the first trip I did to London for the Queen's birthday, the official celebration of the Trooping of the Colors.
In June,
Yeah, we weren't there for that. We were there for the rehearsal the week before.
Oh, great.
Which is actually pretty nice because it's all of, instead of one troop of guards making their way down Pall Mall, it's all the guards in all the regiments making their way down. And it's exactly the same as the final one, except the queen is not in her carriage. It's just that everybody
just
else
carriage.
Has to show up. The queen does not. But it was interesting to see. They're very good at pageantry.
Definitely. Definitely. They do that very well.
Excellent. Anything else sort of downtown? And then I want to quiz you if you want to go further afield. Where would you go? Where would you take people?
Yeah, if I could only recommend a few places, if you have a day trip that you want to do, I would say Brighton if you like the seaside. If you want beaches, they're pebble beaches, don't expect sand, but if you like the beach, there's a big pier with an amusement park on it. Mm-hmm. There's great little shops and there's these tiny little lanes that you can wander down and they've got antique jewelry and all kinds of things. And Brighton has a very kind of hipster vibe to it, so it's a fun place to go.
And just about an hour by train, as I recall.
Exactly, an hour by train, so it's really easy to get there. So I'd say that's one if you want to be by the water. If you like history and sort of university cities and towns, I'd say Oxford and Cambridge are obvious ones as well. Each of them is about an hour from London by train, if not a less, so they're easy to get to on a day trip. And you can obviously walk around, you can see the colleges, some of them you can tour at certain times of the year, and it's just they're just absolutely beautiful places to walk.
And when you say the colleges, the word means something different.
Somewhat.
There.
Some, I think, universities in the U.S. have colleges as well, but it's basically, university, and then the colleges are smaller entities within the university.
That are as much about housing as what degree you're getting.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay.
So those are some good ones as well. And so I would say I'd start there. I could recommend a million more. There's a million more on my blog if you're interested in digging deeper. And then if you have a little bit more time, I would say the Cotswolds is great for either a day trip if you want to drive or take a day tour. Or going overnight, you get to see a lot more. And staying in the Cotswolds is great because you really get to take in the scenery. It's a idyllic part of the countryside. It's west of London, about 2 hours drive from the city. And it is known for just absolutely quintessential, pretty British villages. It has great walking paths and hiking if you like to get outdoors. Lots of sheep if you like cute little cuddly sheep, which I do. But it's just very kind of rural English charm at its best.
Okay. When people read your blog and read about London, what's the one post that people going, I had no idea that would be in London?
Oh, that's a good question. I get that a lot, actually, and mostly about neighborhoods outside of Zone 1. A lot of people, again, focus on Zone 1. They're doing the tourist stuff in the city center. They don't really get out beyond that. And then I write a lot about neighborhoods outside of Zone 1. And so I get a lot of people saying, wow, I had no idea this place existed. It sounds amazing. I can't believe I've never been or I've never thought to go. I even get people who live in London who say, wow, I'd never even been to that place. So I think that's the thing that surprises people the most. It's just how big London is. and how much you can do there if you want to, or you can obviously stay in the city center as well and do the more classic kind of tourist routes.
Well, and one thing that you talked about in the beginning, you talked about world-class anything. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you didn't mention, and I'm thinking some people thought you didn't mention it intentionally, and 30 years ago it would have been intentional, was the food scene. 30 years ago, you didn't talk about London and the food scene.
True.
Unless you were going to Indian food or exactly. something like that. But that has changed.
It has changed. It's changed a lot in the last 15 years, I would say, even just in the last 10. And you not only can get food from all over the world, but the quality mm-hmm. of food in the UK in general, and certainly in London,
right.
has definitely risen dramatically since I moved there. And it's great because 15 years ago, you could get good food, but you'd usually have to pay a lot for it or know the spots to go. Whereas right. now it's much more kind of most places you go have pretty good food, and a lot of places you go have really good food. And so there's still obviously the Indian cuisine is excellent, and I would right. highly recommend any trip to London.
But that's been true for 100 years.
Exactly, so yeah. exactly. But yeah, I'd say now I love pub food. I love going to pubs because they're so quintessentially British mm-hmm. and there's great food. You can get everything from classic fish and chips. You can get pie and mash, which is mashed potatoes. On Sundays, most pubs will do Sunday roast or Sunday lunch, which is basically big roast meals. And they're just very classic British experience.
Excellent. And when I said great food, you first thought of what three restaurants?
Oh, that's a tough one because there are so many great restaurants in London. I would say one of my favorites that I went to fairly recently for the first time, but it's been a fairly classic restaurant for a little while, is called Clove Club. And it is in Shoreditch in the old town hall. So it's a okay. very cool atmosphere because it's in this old kind of historic building. But the chef does really amazing things with either simple produce or things that are a bit different or inventive or creative. The presentation is nice, the service is great, and it all feels very casual while still being fine dining, dressed down, I'd say. Another restaurant I would say for Indian is Tayab's. It is in the East End in Whitechapel. It's very no frills, but a classic Indian restaurant, and the food is absolutely delicious. So that's somewhere that I would say if you want a really classic London experience and really good food, definitely try that. And okay. then for pubs, I would say my favorite is the Holly Bush in Hampstead, which is the neighborhood I was talking about in North London that I absolutely love. And I used to live nearby and go there all the time. And it just has a great ambiance in the winter. There are fireplaces you can cozy up by in the summer. It's just a great atmosphere. You can sit by the windows, and it's got this warren of rooms. It feels very oldie worldy, and it's just very classic British and classic London.
One thing that you would not recommend in London, people ought to skip.
I don't think there's anything that I wouldn't recommend. My usual thing is what I recommend is focusing on what you like, because London's sure. so big you could drown in it. And so it's more, don't get so caught up in trying to see everything and do everything that you don't end up seeing what you actually want to see, rather than this place is overrated or that place is overrated.
Okay. Favorite museum that no one's ever heard of?
I would say the Soane Museum, Sir John Soane's museum. I think some people have heard of it, but it's...
I am not in that group.
It's fairly central. It's not too far from the Holborn Tube Station.
Okay.
And it is a kind of on a square in some old townhouses, and it's a one man's collection that he amassed during his lifetime, and then they turned his home into a museum when he passed away, and it is an amazing collection of everything from art to antiquities. There's a sarcophagus in the basement, but the architecture
doesn't have a sarcophagus in their basement.
It's
though.
True. It's true. It's very in vogue. But yeah, the actual architecture of the house is amazing too. And it just feels like this great little secret. And the museum is free. You have to pre-book tickets, but it's free entry. And it's just a real treat to go in there and just almost feel like you have this sort of secret, a place that you're seeing and discovering.
Well, and you say free, and we've talked about free at different times, because so many of the museums are free in London, not all of them.
Yes.
But that does beg the question of, usually, London is a very expensive city, although it's a little bit on sale right now for those of us who are spending US dollars, as is Europe. But what is your best money-saving tip for London?
To be honest, I would say it's just there's so much in London that's free that people mm-hmm. either don't realize or don't take advantage of. So museums are the number one for me. So many of the museums, especially the big ones, are free. So again, mm-hmm. there's no commitment. If you want to go in for 5 minutes and you hate it, you can leave. But right. it's definitely worth just popping in, seeing what's on. The parks are another one that I think a lot of people don't take advantage of enough. Most people go to Hyde Park because it's right smack in the middle. Maybe St. James's mm-hmm. Park because it's by Buckingham Palace. Yeah. But getting into like Regent's Park has amazing rose gardens. And in the summer, they have an open air theater. Hampstead Heath, like I mentioned before, has amazing views of the city. There's the bathing ponds. Right. There's Kenwood House, which is a museum. It's an old stately home. It's actually in the movie Notting Hill. And there's so many more. Holland Park has beautiful tulip gardens in the spring. So definitely the parks and the museums. But I would also say the markets. Not only are they great ways to save money on eating out, but also they're great just local kind of places to soak up local atmosphere, whether you go to mm-hmm. Borough Market, which is famous, but even just not far from Borough Market is Maltby Street Market, which is a market under some old railway arches in Bermondsey that has great street food and stalls little cafes and restaurants. And that's a real local favorite. And that's somewhere that is just, it's free to walk through, but even if you want to buy some food there, it's not going to cost you the world. And so I think the markets are some of my favorite places as well.
Favorite day tour in London?
So day tour like outside of London or within the city?
Inside, well, let's do both. Inside of London. Day tour or less than a day?
I'm trying to think of what... I would say to take a river boat ride on the Thames.
Okay.
It's a great way to see the city from the water and a unique perspective on it. And a lot of London's big landmarks are on the river. So you can either take an official boat cruise, or you can even take the Thames Clippers. I think they're operated mm-hmm. by Uber now, actually.
Oh, really?
But yeah, but you can just ride up and down. You can go down to Greenwich, which is another great part of London that a lot of tourists mm-hmm. don't get to because it's just a little bit farther, but it has all right. the maritime history there. And then you can go as far east as you want to. I'm not sure how far the Thames Clippers go, but you can certainly go out to Pimlico, Chelsea, going out towards the west in that direction too. And it's a great way to see the city and take in the atmosphere.
Excellent. What question did I not ask that I should have asked?
Oh, I think afternoon tea.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think afternoon tea. It's such a tradition there. Locals love it. Visitors love it. It's just a fun way to experience a British tradition and also mm-hmm. eat delicious food at the same time. And so I think if I had to choose one, actually, I recently went to the one at Fortnum and Mason, and that was just a really excellent quality all around in terms of the food, in terms of the service, in terms of the ambiance. And it was obviously such an iconic place. The Queen herself opened up the tea room there for her Diamond Jubilee in 2012. So it has royal connections as well.
You say afternoon tea. I mentioned how deep the underground was on that particular trip. So this is now over 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. We were traveling with a toddler and my wife was 6 months pregnant.
Oh.
And one day, every single escalator and elevator we were trying to take was broken.
Oh, no.
And this was 30 years ago, so it isn't necessarily your experience now. And as I say, we were staying north of the city by the Regent's Canal, and so we were going down deep. And my wife, at one point, we were walking under the Thames towards the Naval Museum that you mentioned at Greenwich.
Mm-hmm.
We had gone out through the Docklands, which has changed so dramatically in the last 30 years. And that's a completely different place.
Yes.
And she started sobbing that she could not go on. It was just such an exhausting day.
Oh, no.
And fortunately, she did go on because we were under the Thames. There really wasn't a lot of a choice there. Fortunately, the elevator was working at the other end, and we went to tea.
Oh, that's
great. We went to the tea house there by the Naval Museum or by Greenwich Palace there. And tea can be a very soothing, helpful thing. And then we put her on a bus and sent her back.
Yeah.
No, but London can be overwhelming. It's a big city. And if you try and do too much, it can wear you out.
Yes, for sure. And I love to walk and I can mm-hmm. walk for hours and hours. And I get that sometimes. I go, oh my gosh, I've overdone it.
Right.
Because you just don't realize. I think there's so much to see in London. You get distracted and then you realize suddenly you're just exhausted. So definitely
it
to
is
your
a
point.
Beautiful and wonderful city. And there is a lot of places to walk. Too, yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly. I'm just a couple places that I love. Are they still there? Is my question. Cabinet mm-hmm. Worms,
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, cabinet, so the small Churchill's bunker underneath the Downing Street, 10 Downing mm-hmm. Street, that you mm-hmm. can tour and see the pins in the map as they marked where the different boats were going and the different convoys back in World War II. It doesn't mm-hmm. take very long to tour. It's not very big. I'm trying to think what else. We've covered so much.
Yeah. London is vast and there's a lot more to it than this, but we've definitely hit all the highlights.
Oh, we didn't do St. Paul's. There's a great big church there too, yeah.
I think I did mention it once.
You mentioned it once, yeah.
We didn't. It's worth going inside if you like either churches or views, because you can climb all the way to the top of the dome and see all of London from the top, which is great.
As I recall from the Whispering Gallery, up to the top is something like 365 steps.
Yes.
And I was told that by Rick Steves in the Whispering Gallery of St. Paul's, London, when I was on his show as a random person who he picked out of the crowd.
That's
so many years ago, before I was a travel podcaster.
That's
excellent.
Great. Wow.
As we go to wrap this up, we'll get to some of our wrap-up questions. You're in the prettiest spot in London. Where are you? What are you looking at?
I still am biased towards Hampstead. I would say you're in the heart of Hampstead Village. Flask Walk and Walk are two of my favorite streets. They're actually one and the same. One kind of continues into the other. And you get a little pedestrianized stretch with beautiful shops and antiques spilling out into the walkway. And then you go past just these beautiful houses and quintessential red phone boxes, and it takes you down to Hampstead Heath, the park I was mentioning. So I would say that for me is the most beautiful part of London.
Someone says they're going to London. What neighborhood would you recommend they stay in?
That is a really tough question, because London is so big. Mm-hmm. Even central London is so big and the attractions are so spread out. There's not really one place to stay. If you want to be closer to Heathrow and some of the museums in South Kensington, I would say South Kensington or Earl's mm-hmm. Court or Kensington, Chelsea kind of area. If you want to be closer to the East End, either for the sort of hipster vibe or mm-hmm. for Tower of London, Tower Bridge, that kind of stuff, I would say either Tower Hill or maybe even in Shoreditch if you want the more kind of trendy part of the city. If you want to be in the heart of thick of things, you can stay in Covent Garden or Soho and really do the West End. But again, there are so many different parts of London and so many places you can go that there's no real right or wrong.
Okay. And money is no cost. Where am I going to stay?
Oh.
And I'm going to invite me along, I think, hopefully.
Yes. My favorite hotel in London is the Goring. It is in Belgravia and it is near Buckingham Palace and has royal connections. It's where Kate Middleton stayed the night before the royal wedding. The Queen Mum is said to have gone there. They do a great afternoon tea, and it's just a very quintessentially British hotel. I've stayed there before and it's just a really amazing place and a very special, very British place to stay. And so I think in London, it's a really kind of place where you can't imagine you're anywhere else. If you wake up in the middle of the night, you're in London because you're there.
And the one thing that surprised me in terms of places to stay, you were telling me when I should say that Julie and I just met for the first time in person last week at a travel event. And you were saying that if I wanted to stay high up with a good view, that I could stay at the top of the Shard.
Yes, the Shangri-La Hotel at the top of the
Which
Shard.
Which I did not know.
Yeah, it's a great option if you want that spectacular, kind of awe-inspiring, jaw-dropping view, for sure.
And if you don't know what the Shard is, look around the skyline of London and you'll probably figure out which is the sharpest looking thing on the South Bank, and that's the Shard.
Yeah.
Versus the pickle-shaped one, which is the Gherkin. Mm-hmm. It's not, the names are not that hard to guess. Excellent. Yeah. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in London.
Oh. That is a good one. I would say, I don't know if laugh is the right word, but I think it puts a smile on my face every time, is the red phone boxes. And especially when I see people in them taking pictures or tourists seeing them for the first time, it's always fun. And it's always such a quintessentially British, maybe not just London, but certainly British thing.
Very good. No, what I'd really like to see are blue police boxes, but I don't tend to see in London.
You see them every once in a while, yeah.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize London in just three words, what three words are you going to use?
Historic, international, and vibrant.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Julie from aladyinlondon.com. And Julie, we're going to send them to your best post on London. Where are we going to send them?
Oh, I have a London travel guide on my blog, and that's a great place to start because it has a lot of my recommendations and links to a lot of my other blog posts about things to do, so you can find it all there.
Excellent. We'll put a link to that in the show notes so that people can find it. Julie, perfect. Thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for London. I'm sure we covered absolutely everything you can do in London.
We've started. We certainly tried. Thank you so much for having me.
I'd like to send out thanks to patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. They get the show a little earlier and they get the ad-free version of the show, the version of the show that always has the chapters and links that the rest of you get for the first month that the show comes out. If you're interested in becoming a patron of the show, go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. In news of the community, I heard from frequent commenter Jeff Ulfs and former guest of the show, who said about the episode we did on driving the Natchez Trace Parkway. A few additional comments on the Natchez Trace episode. The mention of the actual historic Natchez Trace as a national scenic trail was missed. The trail itself is a separate unit of the national park. The pathway parallels the original Native American trace. Meriwether Lewis of Lewis and Clark fame is buried along the parkway at mile marker 385.9. The parkway also has a restored plantation at Mount Locust at mile marker 15.5. A couple of other units of national park system not mentioned is the Bryce's Crossroads National Battlefield Site, the only unit in the national park system with a National Battlefield Site designation, and Tupelo National Battlefield. Both preserve Civil War battlefields on or near the parkway. Finally, National Historic Park preserves the legacy of the town in three locations: the Melrose Mansion, William Johnson's House, the Barber of Natchez, and Fort Rosalie, closed to the public. Thanks so much, Jeff. It is always entertaining and educational to get an email from Jeff about one of the episodes that we have done. And then I heard from yet another former guest of the show and patron of the show, Colin, who said that I love the Alta Via 1 episode. Did a week of Via Ferrata there a while back. Was like being on another planet. And for those of you who don't recall, we've talked about Via Ferratas on the show before, but you're talking about a hiking trail, if you want to call it that. That's a lot of metal ladders and things attached into stone walls. So check that out. And thanks so much, Colin. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com, and thanks so much for listening.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.